Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our colleagues, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us online Mr. Adam Gamble, and he's written a book along with Mr. Watanabe entitled A Public Betrayal, An Inside Look at the Japanese Media Atrocities and Their Warnings to the West. And if you don't understand that this is a warning to the West, why, you'd say, well, who cares what goes on in Japan? But we have to learn from the Japanese experience of the impact on the media on controlling the populace and of course, keep them from recognizing the truth. And one of the things that's pointed out is that there are lots of terrible atrocities that the Japanese committed during the 1930s and of course during the Second World War that are never mentioned in the media today. For instance, here in America, everybody's heard of the Holocaust, but nobody's ever heard of Operation Keelhaul, where our government rounded up 6 million people, Russians, to send them back to Soviet Union to be killed after the Second World War. How would you conceal something like that? You'd control the media. In Japan, they have, of course, the rape of Nanking, and of course, the story of the Korean women who were actually captured, 200,000 of them, and forced into prostitution. Well, I'm going to let Mr. Gamble tell this amazing story. Of course, the media control that exists in Japan today, because if it exists in Japan, could it exist in the United States? Are we getting the true story? Mr. Gamble, how did you happen to write this book?
Hi. Well, I've been interested in media ethics for some time, and Professor Takasato Watanabe was here in Massachusetts, and we struck up a friendship and worked on this book together. He's written about a dozen books in the Japanese language so far. This is his first English language, and then he has another book coming out through Harvard University next year. And so that's sort of how it came about. And hopefully A Public Betrayed, the book, will serve as maybe a cautionary tale, I hope, to us here in the West. The research and the interviews going into it certainly were very enlightening for me over the last 2 to 3 years.
Well, why don't you tell us just a little bit about what happened in Nanking and what happened as far as these Korean women. 200,000 women rounded up and forced into prostitution and beaten into submission by the Japanese. And, of course, this isn't even mentioned in the Japanese media today, is it?
Well, you know, that's more or less true. There is some mention of it. I must say there are certain, you know, Japan is a fairly diverse society, so there is definitely a spectrum of thought on it. However, what's interesting is that there's such an effort particularly by neo-nationalistic publishers, weekly news magazines we focus in on, in A Public Betrayed, so that historical facts such as the story of the Comfort Women, which is an incredible story, have become, instead of known historical facts, we have become issues of public debate, or that's not even a fair way to put it, issues where the average person or even educated people say, you know, I don't think that's been decided yet. I don't know whether or not that really happened. It would sort of be like going to Germany and having mainstream educated Germans say, well, we're not sure if the Holocaust really happened. It's that kind of a dangerous, stark reality. And in the Comfort Woman situation, I just was yesterday in Washington, D.C. with the Washington Coalition for Comfort Women, who are lobbying.
Hold that thought for just a moment.
Sure, I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead. Go ahead. Go right ahead.
Okay. The Washington Coalition for Comfort Women are lobbying the U.S. government to get some recognition by the U.S. government of the comfort women. They've had some, but they'd like to get more status for the comfort women. There were this is an amazing, unique thing in history for a state to actually sponsor sexual slavery. And, you know, the average age of the comfort women, so-called, the sex slaves, were about 16 years old, as young as 12 and 13, documented, you know, up to the early 20s. And it started out after 1937, during the Rape of Nanking. There was a real venereal disease problem with the Japanese Imperial Army. And so as a solution, what they did was they said, well, let's have our own institutionalized brothels. And so they started by just getting regular prostitutes to do the job, and then it became a situation where they then tricked women to, you know, with promises of well-paying jobs in factories, for instance, and then they found themselves held in sexual servitude until finally, towards, you know, the mid, or 1942, 43, a number of Japanese soldiers have stepped forward and said they participated in raids and slave raids, going into villages and door by door and just taking the women so that, again, 200,000 were held in sexual slavery. The scary thing is that even today there are campaigns by major mainstream Japanese news media to keep this historical reality out of the public eye and keep it as a question mark over it, so to speak.
And what about the Nanking, the Rape of Nanking, which was, of course, condoned by the Japanese, the Royal Japanese Government?
Yeah, that's another instance. Again, you know, in A Public Betrayed, we deal with five major case studies of media malfeasance today in the modern world, and they have, I believe, direct relevance to us here in the West. But in this particular situation, 1937, Japan invaded China and moved in to the capital in Nanking at the time. There was a best-selling book in 96 by Iris Chang, still out on the shelves, called The Rape of Nanking. The military, very strict, hierarchical military, based very much on race hate, so that the Chinese were really thought of as less than human by many of the soldiers, had that indoctrinated into them, and they were told to live off the land as they progressed towards the city.
Hold that thought there for just a moment here.
Yes, sir.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Adam Gamble. His book, A Public Betrayed, an inside look at the Japanese media atrocities and their warnings to the West. And, of course, this is talking about the degree of control that exists over the Japanese media. And we'll be talking more about that later. But, of course, how they have managed to cover up for the modern-day Japanese, who most of them weren't around or living even at the time, you know, of these terrible atrocities, how, of course, they have just simply suppressed information about that. And of course the question is, could the similar things happen here? Well, we're talking about the Rape of Nanking, which was a terrible atrocity, and that of course the Chinese people were felt to be sort of subhuman by the Japanese, who felt themselves to be a superior race. So you pick up the story, Adam.
Sure. Unfortunately, what happened when the city was finally sacked, the Japanese army essentially went AWOL. Many of the soldiers just threw away their uniforms and tried to lead into the population, hide into the population. So the Japanese soldiery, a tragic case, were let by the military command just to really go crazy. And there were 21 Westerners in the city at the time, very thoroughly documented reality, although having an exact body count is a very difficult thing. The Chinese estimate about 300,000. Other credible estimates are about killed in a matter of about 6 weeks, primarily at close range. This was one of the worst war crimes, certainly of the 20th century, if not of history of all times. An estimated between 10, and I've heard estimates as much as 60,000 women raped, actually, in the city at the time. And what's interesting about this story is, you know, one journalist who we highlight in the book, A Public Betrayed, is Katsuyuchi Honda. Now, Mr. Honda was not an adult at this time. He was just a child during the war. But he decided to, you know, to write about the truth. He felt that it's important for his, as a patriot, for his nation to really realize the reality of their history and what racism can lead to, what a strictly hierarchical society can lead to. And he was attacked so viciously by various facets of the Japanese news media and continues to be attacked to this day, that he has been completely marginalized, a great journalist, as well as has had so many death threats that he now has to wear a wig and glasses in public. He's kind of a Salman Rushdie of Japan. And so we can see how a tightly controlled news media can really lead to the physical suffering and endangerment of people, as well as the undermining of democracy. Just a couple of quick points. One is that, you know, we talk about Japan, it should be noted that since after the war and occupation reforms, they do have freedom of speech enshrined in the Constitution. They also have a very strong and thriving news media. In fact, the top five largest Japanese newspapers are among the top 20 largest in the world. The number one and number two Japanese newspapers are the number one and number two largest newspapers in the world. So very healthy and democratic, actually, government, or I shouldn't say healthy government, but a democratic government and a very healthy news media, yet we still have this subversion of the truth going on there, which was fascinating to me as I got into the book, the research of it. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. No, I think that your points are very well made. And, of course, in your book, The Public Betrayal, A Public Betrayed, you point out that here in the United States, we have certain problems with access to the media. And you talk about a book called The Media Monopoly by Ben Bogdekian, who actually talks about the fact that we have about six major corporations that own most of the American media, and most Americans don't understand that.
Yes, fascinating instance. Actually, just in the last couple of months, Mr. Bogdekian has come out with a new edition. It's called The New Media Monopoly, and he's revised it to only five major multinational corporations are dominating the U.S. news media. What's fascinating about this is when you look at the Japanese, again, a wonderful culture, very rich culture and diverse group of people. And one thing, unfortunately, that happened, though, leading up into World War II is some very smart people got control of the government, very ruthless people. And what they did, instead of, for instance, in their ally Germany, what they did in that country is they came up with a Nazi press, and they put other businesses out, and basically the Nazi press dominated the information dissemination through society in Germany. But everybody knew this was the Nazi newspaper, or this is the Nazi broadcaster. It was clear, so that you had so-called, you know, good Germans who maybe quietly dissented or more actively dissented and said, I know that this is a Nazi paper, but in Japan, they were much more clever, actually, and what they did was they actually had an intentional policy of putting out of business estimates up to 3,000 newspapers and magazines over about a 12-year period throughout the 30s, so that by the time we got into, you know, the early 1940s, again, just six major companies dominated the entire Japanese news industry, and what the militarists did was they created very tight, close ties and relationships between the bureaucrats and politicians and between these news holders that they could then control the information. And the average Japanese kept seeing, if it was Asahi Shimbun they were looking at in the 30s, it was still Asahi Shimbun that they were looking at in the 40s. It was just that the content was steadily changing, and the industry was steadily shifting towards just a few people owning it. So that when we look back here at the United States today and the Media Monopoly book that you mentioned, and realize how few people currently dominate the U.S. news media, it becomes kind of a scary thing. Fortunately, I don't think we're in the same situation as Japan in the 40s, but the control going on there, as you were mentioning earlier on, before you welcomed me onto your show, about media or information manipulation, it can be quite frightening.
And of course, here in America, we do have the advantage right now of having the internet for the people who really want to get the truth. It's available. We do have, of course, internet radio, which I think is a great, great boon. We have, of course, the alternative media. We have certainly not Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh, in my estimation, are simply a branch of the establishment media. But we do have programs such as this one that go out on stations and networks all across America, a shortwave internet where people are listening. listening, and they're getting the information you're never going to get from those major corporations for which Bill O'Reilly and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw and Rush Limbaugh all work for, those major corporations that are influencing what the American people think. And they think the people are getting both sides. They're really not, any more than they get in Japan today. Now, you write a great deal about the tabloids there and the influence of the tabloids. Here in America, we have the Enquirer, the Star. What do they call them over there in Japan? These flashy little newspapers with the big pictures and the fantastic stories in them.
Well, they have daily papers called, you know, the sports papers, and those are really, truly, I think, by Western estimations, tabloids. But what we kind of focus in on the book is Japanese weekly news magazines, or shukanshi, weekly magazines.
But they correspond to, so, the Enquirer and Star here?
No, which is really the fascinating thing. What you have in Japan is a bifurcated news system. You have the daily papers and the national broadcasters, who tend to be, through the press club system, which we can talk more about, so tightly enmeshed and inside tracked to the information coming from bureaucrats, politicians, and major newspapers. They really have a stranglehold on that information and tend to just feed out, regurgitate sort of press release journalism every day. And so that's the establishment news media. Then these weekly news magazines tend to be almost completely commercial, utterly commercial publications. And what I mean by that is that the key idea of journalism as a profession is almost stripped to zero at this point. So what you tend to get in these weekly news magazines is a hybrid publication where you have multiple different genres of the West all in one magazine in the Japanese weekly news magazine. So you might have really superb, occasionally, not all the time, but occasionally superb investigative journalism going on, and that would be the one place that a good investigative journalist might get his story placed, in a weekly news magazine. But then right next to it, you might have other stories that are made up, you know, whole cloth, complete fabrications, maybe just the grain of truth, and then someone literally is writing fiction and selling it as the news. And then next to that, you have a whole variety of other stuff, whether it's how to improve your golf game, or actually they have oftentimes pornography in these. They'll have rude and puerile cartoons, real hybrid, sort of like Newsweek, combined with the National Enquirer, combined with People, combined with in many cases, Playboy. A couple of them that we focus in are Shukan Shincho and Shukan Bunshin, two of the primary shukanshi. And we really look at those publications. That what's interesting also about them is most Japanese tend to travel to work every day via trains or buses, public transportation. So instead of having the drive time talk radio, they will read the magazines on their way to work. Or, and this gets even a little more scary, is there's heavy advertisements in all of these trains and buses and subways in Japan, everywhere, about, you know, like 2-foot by 3-foot placards on the walls, hanging from the ceilings. And all of the weekly news magazines they don't have any, all of the readership is from the newsstand. They have no subscription base. So each week, these magazines must come up with the most sensational stories possible to get you to actually stop in your tracks, go to the kiosk, and buy one. So when you're riding in the trains, this is fascinating, that you'll have all around you the headlines from this week's weekly news magazines. And so we estimated 20 to 30 million people see those headlines every week.
And, of course, are influenced by what those headlines say. And, of course, the various news media outlets are all controlled by a very small group of people who all seem to have pretty much the same agenda. We're having a little hum on the line. I'm asking if you wouldn't mind hanging up. We'll call you right back. Make sure you're on a hard line telephone. So we'll call you back in just a minute, okay?
Yes, sir.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay, fine. Our guest has been Adam Gamble. We're talking about, of course, what's going on in Japan, but could it be going on in America today as well? We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty.
A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991. It tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. A secret of healthy aging was recently found among people who have lived unusually long, healthy lives. The longest-lived woman, Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years, and man, Antonio Todd of the Italian Isle of Sardinia, who lived 115 years, as well as the Queen Mother of England, who lived 100 years, outliving one of her daughters by 3 decades, was their daily consumption of red wine. But health authorities have been reticent to recommend an alcoholic beverage to the public at large, until now. Longevinex is the world's first stabilized French red wine extract in a pill, without the calories and without the alcohol or sulfite preservatives. One Longevinex capsule provides the red wine molecules found in 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex. It's a revolutionary dietary supplement. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is Adam Campbell. He's an investigative reporter, and he's written a riveting book published by Regnery, one of my favorite publishers. It's Shocking Extent of the Corruption and Fraud in the Japanese Media. A Public Betrayed, that's the title of the book, an inside look at the Japanese media atrocities and their warning to the West, paints a sordid picture of the least free and most irresponsible press of any democratic society in the world. Adam Campbell, along with Mr. Watanabe, have marshaled a mountain of evidence showing how the Japanese news industry routinely distorts the news, deceives its customers, and misleads the world. Their expose and their book, A Public Betrayed, uncovers the sickening lack of ethics in an industry that readers traditionally look to for accurate information. Well, Adam, don't the reporters over in Japan understand what's going on, or they simply want to keep their jobs and simply go with the flow?
Oh, that's an interesting question. You know, again, you know, it's 128 million people, so you're going to have a wide variety, as I'm sure you know. There are some definite journalists, such as Honda Katsuyuchi, who I mentioned earlier, really standing up, and we highlight some others in the industry who do that. Also, some professors, such as Professor Watanabe, the co-author, who've done that. Within the actual journalistic profession, however, I would say it's really a different paradigm. And one of the issues is, and this is gets very much to Western issues, where you know, journalism is the idea of journalism as a profession is being undermined, I believe. In Japan, there's really not a strong tradition of that, certainly not since the 30s. There was actually some period around the turn of the century where there was some solid democratic journalists going on, but especially since the end of the war, the U.S. occupation forces did not particularly reform the Japanese news industry. In fact, during the 6 to 7 years that we were occupying Japan, we essentially used that infrastructure to put our own information, you know, into the society and hopefully manipulate it the way we wanted it to go at that time. So today, many journalists start their careers and really don't think of it as becoming a journalist. That's not their main goal when they get the job as a reporter. They think of themselves as an employee of Yomiuri, an employee of NHK. And for a while, they figure, well, I'm going to be a writer and write this, and then I'll work my way up to management, and I won't be writing anymore. So it's more of a mentality of being a company employee, a company person, as opposed to being a journalist with a mission. And unfortunately, you know, I think here in the West, as commercialism gets stronger and stronger, you know, one arrow that I think we point here is that is journalism as a profession being undermined in the United States over the last 2-3 decades or not?
Well, of course, you have a different tradition among the people, and in Japan, isn't there sort of a respect for authority? There's no fear of authority. You go along, you get along, you know, you get a job, you keep it through your life, you grow old, the government takes care of you. But it's a very paternalistic sort of a society, isn't it? Isn't it entirely different than the individualism, at least, that we once had here in America?
Yes. You know, 300 years of really strict control like that going on in Japan. So you do have a long-rooted tradition of hierarchy within the society, and so that does play into it. However, you know, my co-author, Takasato Watanabe, really, in A Public Betrayed, I think, makes the point against that, where, you know, it's unfair to say, well, cultural relativism, the Japanese like having a hierarchical study, they don't like democracy, they don't like individualism, they don't want to have self-government, they want to be told what to do by authority figures. You know, that's not really true. When you look at various statistics that we looked at, for instance, the suicide rate in Japan is twice that of the United States currently. Recent survey showed that 80% of all Japanese are dissatisfied with their governance going on there. A lot of, especially in the last 10 years, feeling of disconnect in Japanese society. And I believe a lot of it stems from the sad fact that certain forces in the society are trying to continue to foist that mentality of do what, you know, your so-called betters tell you to do, keep your place. And I think that's really a root of the problem. The Japanese are as capable of self-government as any other human beings.
Well, I think one of the things I was so interested in was sort of during the Second World War, the soldiers anticipated they would fight to the death for emperor, and then, of course, at the end of the, you know, they would fight till everyone was dead, and the emperor would commit suicide. That was what they believed. The emperor represented God, and I think your book gives some insight into the Japanese mentality, at least as it existed during the Second World War, but we're not going to have time to cover that right now. We're going to have to go to another break, but when we get back, I'd like to explore the Japanese before the Second World War and since then, and then of course open our lines to callers at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295.
really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, In Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
Hi, my name is Michael Anthony Perugia, and I approved of this ad. I'm seeking the presidential nomination of the Constitution Party, and one of the reasons I'm running is to put the interest of American workers first, which President Bush is not doing. Mr. Bush has advocated an immigration plan that would let millions of illegal aliens stay in our country, and the chairman of his Council of Economic Advisors has praised what is called outsourcing, which will send millions of American jobs overseas. In other words, Mr. Bush is importing illegal cheap labor and exporting good-paying jobs that should stay in America. Well, this makes no sense. Such policies are outrageous at a time when so many Americans are looking for jobs and want to work. The sad fact is that neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are looking out for American workers first. As president, I would put our people first. I hope you'll look at my webpage, perukka2004.com, that's perukka2004.com, and remember, you never waste your vote when you vote for what's right.
Authorized and paid for by Perukka 2004.
The Midwest Gift and Fudge House manufactures the best fudge in the world. They've discovered a secret recipe and it allowed them to actually make the creamiest and most delicious fudge you're going to find anywhere. They also have a sugar-free type of fudge that has a great creamy taste and yet is safe for diabetics. The fudge is made daily and there are over 30 to 40 different flavors in the store every single day. Midwest Fudge makes a perfect gift for any occasion and makes even a better treat for you. It's shipped out daily, so you're always guaranteed the freshest fudge. So why not place your order by calling 866-526-5419. That's 866-526-5419. Or visit their website at www.worldfamousfudge.com. That's worldfamousfudge.com. Your order will be shipped out the next day. And, of course, they're open 7 days a week. Why don't you stop by and visit them there from 9 in the morning until 9 in the evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Adam Gamble. And, of course, we're talking about Adam Gamble, and we're talking about his book, A Public Betrayed, an inside look at Japanese media atrocities and their warning to the West. Now, of course, you're talking about, in some respects, that we should be very, very worried that the same thing would happen here. Is that what you're suggesting?
Well, you know, in the five case studies in A Public Betrayed, and they are extreme instances of media malfeasance, I should emphasize. You know, we chose things that were entirely incontrovertible examples. So they really are extreme and outrageous examples. But when you look at them, what caused them, they weren't conspiracy theories, etc. What they are is structural issues, issues such as legal reform or laws on the books, commercial pressures, industry structure, professional standards in the industry. And when we factored out and pulled out all the different factors that created these really terrible situations, these case studies in A Public Betrayed, somebody started realizing, hey, you know, all of these are very present here in the United States and throughout the West. And it was sort of like, for me anyway, Professor Watanabe, a different story, of course, being a Japanese, but for me it was sort of, when you travel and live abroad for a while and then you come home, oftentimes you have this fresh eye and you see things anew and see them sometimes more truly than you did when you were living there full time, when you just come back. And that was sort of how it worked for me looking at the Western news media. And I hope and have gotten feedback that many people reading A Public Betrayed have had a similar experience. These are not exotic things that only happen in a far-off place like Japan And Japan is really an excellent example for us to use metaphorically to look at our own situation.
Almost like looking through a mirror and seeing yourself there.
Well, you know, the Japanese are the second largest economy on Earth. They're one of our closest partners. They have a highly industrialized, high-tech, high-literate society. Freedom of speech is enshrined in the Constitution. There is no dictator telling everybody what to do. They have regular elections. It's been the same party in power since 1955, despite those elections. Nevertheless, you know, all of the structures that are, or most of the major structures that exist in our democracy and our free market exist there as well. The other point is that the Japanese news industry is just mammoth. Very powerful, sophisticated news industry. So in that case, it is like a mirror for ours as well.
All right, fine. And of course, you certainly go into the fact that there's certain stories that just never see the light of day. In other words, they're able to adequately suppress that or so confuse the people that they most of them really don't understand the implications of the rape of Nanking or the comfort woman, where 200,000 of these women were forced into prostitution. And to this very day, they've never been able to get any compensation with the Japanese government, have they?
No. They've had a couple of informal apologies, and there was a private group that has given some money to some of the victims, but no, they've never actually as a society come forward and said, you know, we know we did this war of aggression and it was wrong, we're sorry, and here's compensation, or here's an official voted on in the Diet saying an official law voted on the Diet of apology for you. So that is a shame. And you know, another example in the book is anti-Semitism. You know, Japan is a country almost bereft of Jews, less than 2,000 in a country of 128 million people. Yet we find a lot of publications in Japan with a lot of anti-Semitism. At first glance, a boggling situation. But what it is we find, number one, commercialism, because these conspiracy theories sell, and number two, it distracts the people from the real issues going on, and can put the average everyday person's mind on that. Oh, what is this foreign force that's trying to attack our country? It must be someone else's fault. Instead of actually looking at our own leaders in our own country and saying, hey, what's going on with our pension system, for example?
Well, don't you think there's some very real problems within this sort of one-party rule? They may have a democracy, but of course, when a small group of people control the media, they can pretty well influence who's going to get elected. And one government, one party, has been in power for almost over 50 years now.
Just short of 50 years, since 1955, there was a 9-month period where the Liberal Democratic Party lost power. And I believe that is a direct result of media manipulation in Japan. You know, and something else that's very rarely talked about is actually the CIA, and this is well-documented reality, throughout the 60s gave millions of dollars to the Liberal Democratic Party in Japan, just giving it to them so that they could spend that money in ways that would help them stay in power. And that was so that the Japanese government would follow the U.S. lead in international situations and allow our bases there, etc. Go ahead.
Are you suggesting then that we finance this party so that they would do our bidding, and that perhaps they're still doing our bidding?
Yes, absolutely. And I would say that 100%. They are, whether or not they're doing our bidding as well now or not is up to debate. What's interesting is that the LDP, many of those, the philosophical foundations behind that party and many of the lineages of teacher to student in the political realm and in the school system there come directly from the militarists. These are the same people with the same types of philosophies that are in power now that were in power before. And now we can start, when we look at these issues such as the whitewashing of the rape of Nanking, the denial of the comfort women system, etc., by certain factors of the Japanese news media, we can see how this really supports liberal democratic rule. Many commentators have pointed out that if the Japanese people were fully apprised of what their government did in their name throughout Asia, that you'd see people going to the voting boxes, changing the leadership there very quickly. But the media is keeping that power structure in place.
And, of course, this is my concern, that we have a two-party system here in the United States, and yet they both seem to be headed the same direction. And the reason that the average American never hears about the third-party candidates that are running is because the media doesn't ever want to talk about them. Oh, they talk about Ralph Nader because they want to pull votes away from George Kerry so that Bush will get elected. But it seems that both the liberal and the conservative media here in America, for some strange reason, never admit even the existence of both the Constitution Party and the Libertarian Party, which will be on the ballot in well over 40 states, whereas Ralph Nader right now is struggling to get onto a 24, 25 different state ballots. So isn't that interesting? I wonder why they never mention the others, or could it be that, well, maybe there's not a dime's worth of difference between what's going anyway, as you've written this book and you're talking to people across America, do you think the average American is concerned about our media as a reflection of what's happening in Japan?
I think that in recent years we are starting to see a backlash against what you just described there. You know, whether it's left or right, right liberal or conservative news media, corporate news media, because it is owned by a very small group of multinational corporations who have very tight relationships with both the Democratic and the Republican Party. So, you know, like you said, there's a lot of impetus to keep that power structure in place. However, you know, as Ben Bagdicki in his Media Monopoly points out, you know, there's, I guess, 100 different groups right now currently, like FreePress.net, et cetera, working to reform the U.S. news media. The attempts last year to further increase media consolidation through FCC rolling back of the laws, which are already so far back it's ridiculous, but there was actually a backlash against that, despite the fact that the mainstream U.S. news media kept public debate about FCC rules on ownership out of the press. You know, for example, previous to 1996, no company could own more than 40 radio stations nationwide. Clear Channel, for instance, owns 1,240 plus stations now today. So the diversity there in broadcast is shrinking. Perfect example.
And so what they're really doing, the government is allowing the concentration of power, media power, in the hands of people who certainly would not be adverse to continuing seeing the same power structure maintained in the government. At one time, the FCC or the FCC used to restrict this power. You couldn't own more than a certain number of radio stations or television stations, and now they've simply taken off the limits, and very soon we may only have one or two major corporations controlling everything. This is my fear.
Well, I mean, I think our fears have been reached with just about basically five, you know, top-tier companies in our country owning the news media. The other thing is, because they're so, you know, because they're bottom-line driven, there's nothing wrong with a free market, don't get me wrong. However, we're looking at not a free market economy here in the news media, certainly national news media in the United States. We're looking at an oligopolistic news media system. It's not a free market system at all. And these corporations are so bottom-line oriented that they're cutting back on reporters, cutting back on support of public journalism, so that what you tend to get also is not only a homogenized from a very small group of people, but a press corps that's very limited in its capacity to cover issues from a diversity of ranges, and which tend to rely increasingly, day by day, more and more on top official sources, on press releases, on insider leaks, as opposed to going out on the street and finding original voices, looking at stories from different angles. When you look at Japan and you see how tightly controlled that is, where the mainstream news media is literally spoon-fed their news every day, and then you look back at the United States and start seeing that we're heading directly in that direction, it becomes a very shocking, frightening situation.
All right, well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And ladies and gentlemen, I think that you should take very seriously what Adam Gamble is saying here, and he's really talking about the fact that maybe we're not getting all the news all the time. Let's go to Roger, who's calling from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thanks. I wanted to ask your guest if you thought anything of, like with the Clear Channels in particular, they had this near-universal war whoop cast in terms of supporting our troops, of course. That was the focus. And yet, I think that you might find two Clear Channel, the morning guy that does the, you know, the local radio, you might find two throughout the entire land at these Clear Channel stations that ever questioned the war, and they might have got fired. And now, since
did you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask him if he had any thoughts. And then there's zero focus with all this supporting our troops on taking care of them now that some few of them are coming back home and the, you know, the cuts in veterans benefits, et cetera, which they seem to have zero interest in. Do you have any reflections on that score and how that might reflect that same control?
Okay, fine. Thanks so much, Roger. And of course, Roger's question is, you know, this Clear Channel, it seems that there seems to be such tremendous support for the war from a certain of the major media combines today.
Well, I think that's a great couple of points by Roger. You know, I'm not an expert on the on Clear Channel or on their programming by any stretch. And but I will say this: I'll say that, you know, Japan in the 1930s, with that tightly controlled news media, very few owners were able to spin the reality of what was going on in the world to the Japanese people of that day, and they were able to couch Japanese wars of aggression, moves of aggression into Manchuria and then into mainland China as preemptive attacks, as just movements by the troops. If you look at the press of those days, you know, you really, the average person who reads these clippings is going to be cheering on the wonderful Japanese soldiery for going to China and liberating them from their terrible leaders, from going into Manchuria and spreading the greatness of the Japanese people to those poor, suppressed people. And so you were very easy at that time to get the vast majority of the Japanese people to support those militaristic wars of aggression. If the caller sees similarities with what's going on today, you know, I'll leave that to him. I, you know, the book focuses on Japan, and then let's hopefully the readers draw conclusions about the U.S.
Well, I think that if you read the book, as I have, why, of course, you have to be pretty blind not to see there are many marked similarities between the war party that existed in Imperial Japan, you know, during the 1930s, and of course, they thought they could never win the war. Pardon me, they could never lose the war. They believed in Japan. They believed that Japan was a very noble, unusual country, and of course, with their leadership, God was on their side. And they were going to win the war. And even when the war turned against them, because of the media control, why, they really didn't understand what was happening. And it really wasn't until just almost the very bitter end, when the sudden realization came that they'd been lied to, that they were going to lose the war, they were humiliated. You know, there's only one thing worse than being in war, and that's losing a war. Japan lost the war, but America could lose the war, too.
Yeah, I'll say the scary thing in Japan is that now not only did they lose the war, a war of aggression, but now it's been cast so that much of the Japanese citizenry today, educated, very literate, intellectual people, look back at the war and see Japan as much a victim as anything else during the war, and are not aware of the aggression, the racism that fueled that, which becomes very scary. And then, you know, again, you know, looking at the United States, how many U.S. citizens, for instance, are aware of U.S. actions in Guatemala, in Chile, in Afghanistan, for instance, or even supporting Saddam Hussein at a certain point, you know. How aware are our own people of our own history? You know, it's a cliche, but it's very true that those who are unaware of history are destined to repeat it. And this becomes very clear in Japan when you have such a blatantly racist, brutal wartime country during World War II, and then the people not being aware of what their own people did just a couple of generations ago.
Oh, well, let's go to Andrea, who's calling from Ohio. Andrea, do you have a quick question? We're almost out of time.
Yes, I do. Didn't our own government, though, kind of abet the, you know, hiding of the atrocities that took place at Unit 731?
You're talking about in Japan where they...
Yes, the medical experiment. Sure, they
covered that up. They're still covering it up today.
Yeah.
But of course, that gets into, of course, the Brotherhood of Darkness and the spiritual forces. Thank you so much for calling, though. I appreciate you mentioning that. That was horrible atrocities that were carried out against American soldiers by the Japanese. And we rewarded the people who did that. We gave them, of course, carte blanche as long as they turned over the records of their horrible experiments, dissecting American soldiers, prisoners of war, while they were still alive. Thank you so very much for being with us, Adam. It's a great book. I hope maybe we can get you back on one of our other programs.
Thank you, Doctor. It was a pleasure being here and talking about a public betrayal. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, if there's any one tape that you should hear, it's my talk on geopolitics, an untold story that is vitally important if America is to survive as a free nation. It goes into the background of the forces that have created the wars of the 20th century, the Boer War, the First World War, the Second World War, Korea, Vietnam. We go into the ideological and the spiritual battle behind the forces that have moved America from crisis to crisis and are currently undermining the very fabric of our society. That number again, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and the tape, Geopolitics. It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for copies of my talk on geopolitics.
The Midwest Gift and Fudge House manufactures the best fudge in the world. They've discovered a secret recipe, and it allowed them to actually make the creamiest and most delicious fudge you're going to find anywhere. They also have a sugar-free type of fudge that has a great creamy taste, and yet is safe for diabetics. The fudge is made daily, and there are over 30 to 40 different flavors in the store every single day. Midwest Fudge makes a perfect gift for any occasion, and makes even a better treat for you. It's shipped out daily, so you're always guaranteed the freshest fudge. So why not place your order by calling 866-526-5419. That's 866-526-5419. Or visit their website at www.worldfamousfudge.com. That's worldfamousfudge.com. Your order will be shipped out the next day. And, of course, they're open 7 days a week. Why don't you stop by and visit them there from 9 in the morning until 9 in the evening. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I want to tell you about the Robinson Homeschool Curriculum. This is a wonderful means of teaching your children at home and getting them out of government schools. The Robinson Homeschool Curriculum is designed to give excellence in education. It's a program. It's on 22 CDs designed to take your child from grammar school all the way through high school graduation, and it costs $199.95. You actually get the lesson plans, you get the tests, you get the answers to the tests, you get all of the textbooks except for the Saxon math textbooks, a wonderful way to educate your children. Let me recommend this to you. Dr. Robinson used this program on his own children. The Robinson Homeschool Program is available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And if you love your children, get them out of government school just as soon as possible. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I have to remind you Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and I do so many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, you can get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you're helping us as we reach out across America, 5 hours every day, bringing the information you're not going to get from the controlled major media here in the United States, what Ben Bakakian refers to as the new media monopoly. So if you'd like to get more information on our ministry, go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to us there 5 hours a day on the Internet. You can get our programs 4 hours a day on shortwave, 4 hours a day on satellite, 5 hours a day somewhere on the radio all across America. And again, that website is www.radioliberty.com. Now, we do hope that many of you will want to get our information on the secret government that runs the world. We have a four-tape set on the secret government, including an interview with Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor. And, of course, Professor Quigley talks about how his book on the secret society that runs America was actually suppressed for a number of years. Somebody bought up the publisher, Macmillan Company, and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book so it couldn't be reprinted. Well, it was reprinted, but certainly not by Macmillan. Under any circumstances, we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells this amazing, amazing story. And in that four-tape set, you'll also hear my interview with Norman Dodd, who is Director of Research for the Reese Committee that investigated the great tax-exempt foundations back in 1954 and 1955. And what did they find? Why they were financing communism and socialism. You see, you're supposed to believe that socialism is redistributing the wealth of the wealthy. No, it's redistributing the wealth of the people. The wealthy maintain their wealth, of course, if they're part of the ruling elite, because the real goal is the establishment of a system of government very similar to what Plato advocated in his book, The Republic. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want you to know. And so we suggest the four-tape set on the secret government, or you can get the secret government special that has a four-tape set in addition, the secret societies, and, of course, other videos, or four videos going into the secrets of the Illuminati from within, Bill Sneblin's programs that he was actually in the satanic levels, the upper levels of masonry, and a fascinating insight into the fact that there really are satanic organizations in the world today. And then, of course, we have a four-tape set on the Kennedy assassination, a four-tape set on the FBI, and, of course, you'll actually get a couple of books with that. One of them is called Double Cross. It's written by the brother of the head of the mafia, a man named Chuck Giancano, telling about how the CIA used the mafia for assassinations here in the United States, killing an American president. It's all there in the book. Of course, another book, how the FBI has worked with the mafia and covered for a man named Whitey Bulger, who killed 20 people and tortured some of them to death while being protected by the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Boy, with protection like that, we really don't need enemies. The book is called The Dangerous Alliance. We have so much information, and you need to get it through Radio Liberty, a Vietnam special to understand what really happened in Vietnam. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. A very important book we carry. We've kept in print for many years. Foundations, their power and their influence, telling you what the great tax-exempt foundations and the people of great wealth are really doing. Not what you read about in your textbooks, not what Rush Limbaugh says. What are they really up to? The Rockefeller Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, based upon the only congressional investigation ever allowed. And so, remember, book foundations, their power and influence. And, of course, we ask you to call us at 1-800-544-8927. Consider coming to our November 6th all-day meeting, Saturday meeting here at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. Call us at 1-800-544-8927 and pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection till tomorrow. May the Lord be with you.